Please turn to Revelation chapter 17. The way we're going to do Revelation 17 and at least part of 18. I know we do this, we switch up our methods sometimes. What I want to do today is I want to walk through basically sentence by sentence, all right? And then we're going to ask some questions. Especially, we're going to ask two. Is there any idea that John is pulling from, developing on, right? For example, one of his previous ideas or some of his previous language. This is something he does a lot. There's a great deal of repetition in this book. Right? But also, we're going to be thinking about, as we go sentence by sentence or thought by thought, how John is developing things. Occasionally, we'll look forward. All right. There's a few things I'll point out and say, hey, if you know about this thing in the two chapters from now, it's going to help you out. But mostly, we're going to be going sentence by sentence, just seeing how the ideas develop. Because that's normally how you read something, right? You read an argument, you read an article, and you're going line by line and they're building. Chapter 17 weaves in and out a lot about Babylon the Great and the Beast. Babylon the Great. Oh, focus on the Beast for a while. You know, things like that. So we're going to walk through thought sentence by sentence. All right. And basically imagine you're doing Bible study and you're trying to figure out what it's trying to say. Except we're just going to do it as a group. Okay. Ready? Revelation 17. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." Right? There's a good chunk. All right? First question, as you're reading about this, how is this sentence connected with what came before? And how do you know? Not just the answer, but how do you know it's connected to something before? Oh, so your translation starts with "and"?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Content-wise, mine just says "then," which is "then," right? That's temporal sequence. "And" is similar. Okay. What's that? Okay, then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came. So this is clearly connecting to what just happened, right? Because we just saw the seven vials, the seven bowls, all right, and the seven angels. So he's definitely developing, all right? So one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came, and do we know which one?
Doesn't really say.
"Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters." Now, one of the negatives, slight drawbacks of the approach we've taken in Revelation, because we've already spent a good time in this chapter a long time ago, is we've had a preview of some things. I believe this is the first time, though, in the book of Revelation, where Babylon is now spoken of as a harlot, a prostitute. I believe this is the first time. We've seen hints of Babylon. We've seen the great city, which is spiritually called Sodom and Gomorrah, where our Lord was crucified. We've seen, you know, bad things about the city. And in the last chapter, all right, one of the bowls was about Babylon. Here is a development of that. All right. Now we are really going to dig into who this is. "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters." Have we seen this language before in Revelation? We actually have, though this specific phrase gets explained in like 13 verses. So we'll wait. "With whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." Two things here. Right? Remember, we are not actually talking about a woman. Okay? We are not actually talking about a woman. We are talking about a city or a nation. And remember, this is just something that's different about our modern way of looking at things, all right, than the ancient. When we think of nations, we don't think of cities, right? We think of a collection, a body of many cities that all have collective laws, often of the same language, things like that. This is not at all how they worked. All right, that is a much later invention. At this time, nations are ruled by cities. All right, Rome as a republic. All right, Rome did not go to Jerusalem when it needed to vote on some laws and ask them what they thought. All right, it was a republic, and by republic it meant the Roman citizens and only them, the citizens of Rome. Okay, and so when you see the city, you should think nation. Don't think what we have today, but think of it as a ruling city. Like Rome was a ruling city, like when Alexander was the great was ruling. He didn't rule from a specific city, but it was a specific person, right? All the power was around him. They sometimes had collective notions of identity, like the Greeks. They clearly did, but every city was autonomous. Okay? So when this is talking about a woman, it's talking about a city. And it's talking about a people. All right? Talking about a city, but primarily because of its leadership. And, for example, that if it's Rome, it's Rome. If it's the Jews, it's Jerusalem. If you go back three or four centuries and you're talking about the Athenian Empire, it's Athens. Okay? With whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk. Okay? And so what that means is, when it's talking about kings, this is not physical. This is talking about rulers. All right? This is talking about rulers of some sort and people of some sort, but not actually talking about physical sexual immorality. Now, in your Bible study, if you've got a lot of Old Testament background, you're going to know this language is often applied to some particular group of people in the past. Who would that be?
The Hebrews.
The Hebrews. There are two exceptions to that in the Old Testament. Tyre, because they did actually have a covenant with God. They are the same kind of language is applied to them. And Nineveh. Why Nineveh? They all repented at the preaching of Jonah. All right? But everywhere else in the Old Testament, when it uses this language, it's always talking about the nation of Israel. And so this is talking about a nation not being faithful to its covenant with its head. Right? So that's the basic notion. And so when you're doing Bible study, if you're really got your Old Testament in your head, you're going to think about these ideas. So one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came to me and said to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." What about this language of becoming drunk? What does this mean? If you were to apply it to a nation, not a person, we know what drunkenness would mean. What is this saying about the relationship between these people and the harlot?
It seems like wine is usually associated with prosperity. So I think it's probably some sort of an economic relationship.
Okay. And we're going to see a lot about economics in these two chapters, which is really interesting. And this also gets into some of the Old Testament stuff we're going to read here very soon. All right, so that's one thought. At this point, all we know is we have a city, a nation, which is unfaithful, all right, unfaithful to God. Verse 3. "And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had seven heads and ten horns." Stop there. Okay. verse 3, we're now continuing on, right? We're thinking about the argument. First question is, who's the he?
The angel.
The angel, okay? And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. Why a wilderness? What kind of
outside the city.
Connotations? Outside the city. Okay?
And obviously, a desert.
Into a desert. It was the same word. That's fair.
Yeah.
It really just means a not particularly inhabited place. It doesn't have to have a little bit of rainfall, but it just means out there where nobody's living, which would be true of deserts most of the time.
No civilization.
Okay? So he carried me away in the spirit, not just carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. All right? Have we seen any of this before? In Revelation or elsewhere? Okay, so let's turn to chapter 13. Let's actually turn to chapter 12. What color is the beast? Scarlet, red. Okay? We'll start in 12 and 13 because we need to talk about these. In 12, we've got a sign appearing in heaven. There's a woman who's pregnant, crying out in birth pains and agony and giving birth, verse 3. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads 7 diadems. All right? And we've already identified the dragon as whom? This is Satan. All right? This is very clearly identified within the thing. Now, when you get to chapter 13, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads and 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. Okay? So now, as you're reading through Revelation, right, you've already seen this image of this dragon, 7 heads, 10 horns, a beast, right, that looks like the dragon. Remember, the beast has the authority of the dragon, doing the dragon's bidding. So when you get to 17, all right, so when you get to 17, you remember this. Now, if you're listening to this in one sitting, all right, you're more likely to remember that thing, because the dragon and the beast and the second beast, big things, right? And so they weren't just passing references. They were important topics. We spread this out over weeks, and so it's easy to forget. But now, you have this beast again, all right? And now, what are you going to ask at this point? What's a good question to ask now that we've got this beast? But we've had two beasts before. We should probably ask, is it the same one as one of those? And if it is, which one of those is this? Let's look at it again. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had 7 heads and 10 horns. There's one detail in this that makes it look like the dragon, but there's another beast in this that makes it look like the beast in 13. You remember what they are? Look at it.
Heads and 10 horns.
They all had the same amount of heads and horns.
Scarlet.
Which one was scarlet?
The dragon.
The dragon. What's the other detail that's different?
Blasphemous names.
Blasphemous names. Dragon didn't have blasphemous names. Beast had blasphemous names. So, we have to think about that. We may not know yet, right? As we read through the text, we may not know. But we'll want to ask this question. Well, which one is it? Because the text very clearly distinguished between them before, and it will continue to distinguish between them later. They are certainly not the same thing. I mean, it could simply be that the first beast after the dragon, he just didn't mention that he was scarlet in color. Could be that. Or it could be that he just didn't mention that the dragon had blasphemous names on its head. It could go either way. You see how we're referencing something before, but it's ambiguous, and we've got to figure out what it is. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names and had seven heads and ten horns. Turn real quick to chapter 21. This is one of those few times where we'll actually look ahead. Okay? It's 21:9. You'll see something very similar. Then came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues. Again, to John. And spoke to me, saying, "Come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb." Okay? And he took you to a high mountain, not a deserted place this time. A great high mountain showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Now, if you know what's coming, it's more obvious to see the parallel. Because if you know in 17 and 18 that the prostitute is going to get dethroned, of course, we know that actually from the previous chapter, right? If you look at the very last bowl, it says in chapter 16, verse 19, the great city was split into three parts and the cities of the nations fell. And God remembered Babylon the Great to make her drain the cup of the wine of the fury of his wrath. All right. So it's clear already. We know by the time we get to this woman, whoever it is, that God is going to judge this woman. And so whatever is happening in 21, verse 9, is, I think, essentially a replacement. All right? Why do you need a new Jerusalem? Why do you need a new heavens and a new earth? Why do you need this blessing? Because God is dismantling what's here right now. So whatever is coming in 21, verse 9, I think John's trying to set it up as this is part of God's plan to fix what's happening, right? And by fixing what's happening, meaning restoring what he is at this point going to destroy. Okay, so you get this angel from this last set of plagues showing John two things. But then again, a lot happens between now and chapter 21. Okay, so he's carried away into the spirit, into the wilderness, into a wilderness. Verse 4, the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. All right, verse 4. What is the connection now between verse 4 and before? What is it developing?
A cup or a bowl,
okay? Who is the subject matter?
The woman.
It's the woman. It's not the beast, right? He's going to go from woman to beast throughout this. We're now switching back to the woman. Now, this is a very poor woman. Is it in the description?
No,
it's quite the opposite. This is an incredibly rich woman, all right? Incredibly rich woman. Purple, scarlet.
And she's riding on this beast, sitting on this.
Was arrayed in, yep. The woman is arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with golden jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery. All right? Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. Okay? So how does this relate to what came before? This is just developing the same thoughts, right? How is the woman like the beast? What now connects them? They're both wearing scarlet. What else connects them?
Full of abominations.
Full of abominations. On their head is written a name, right? The beast had abominations written all over it. And now she has a mysterious name. Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abomination. All right?
She was corrupt with wine before, and now she has a golden cup in her hand.
Mm-hmm.
The NIV refers to 14:8, the second angel followed and said, Fallen is Babylon the Great, which made all the nations drink the maddening wine of their adulteries.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you're going through your Bible study, who has a Bible that has little verse references? Tied, right? It's really useful often to follow these. A lot of you probably for verse 4 have a reference to Jeremiah 51. All right, let's go to Jeremiah 51. Keep your finger here. I thought about having us look up every single reference as we're going through, because you need to think through them all and think through which ones are relevant. All right, which ones are relevant, which ones really change the meaning, versus which ones are just like linguistic allusions there, where it's good to know what the language sounds like, but it's not quite the same. And some of them might even be spurious. This is one that's really useful. This is a oracle about the destruction of Babylon, right? Fallen is Babylon the Great.
Sounds familiar.
And if we look at verse 4, they shall fall down slain in the lands of the Chaldeans and wounded in her streets, for Israel and Judah have not been forsaken by their God, the Lord of hosts. But the guilt of the Chaldeans the land of the Chaldeans is full of guilt against the Holy One of Israel. Flee from the midst of Babylon, let everyone save his life. Be not cut off in her punishment. For this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, the repayment he is rendering her. Babylon was a golden cup in the Lord's hand, making all the earth drunken, and the nations drunk her wine. Therefore, the nations went mad. Suddenly, Babylon has fallen and been broken. Wail for her. Take balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she was not healed. Forsake her. Let us go each to his own country. For her judgment has reached up to heaven and has been lifted up even to the skies. The Lord has brought about our vindication. Come, let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. If you read, as we read through, right, as we read through this chapter, there are a few chapters in Jeremiah, Isaiah, and Ezekiel. And if you read them in parallel, you will go, wow. All of this language, there's so much of this language is used. In this particular case, flee out of the midst of Babylon. We're going to see this in a bit. Don't know if we'll get to it today, but it's in this text of these two chapters. He tells them to flee out of the midst of Babylon. The golden cup, all right? Golden cup. Nations drank of her wine. Suddenly, Babylon has fallen. There's an emphasis in these chapters on the destruction has come in one day. Suddenly, it has happened. Her judgment has reached up to heaven, all right? It has been lifted up even to the skies. That same kind of language is about to be used in Revelation. So John, whose only Bible is the Old Testament, is full of this language, full in his head, and we're going to see a lot of it here. So on her forehead was written a name of mystery. We've read that. In verse 6, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Okay? Now she was drunk. She was not drunk with wine. All right? That is not what intoxicated her. All right? Why would you drink wine? I know we have some wine drinkers in here. Why do you drink wine? Because you like it, maybe, right? For pleasure, right? You drink it for pleasure.
And
health. Okay? This lady here, she's drinking for pleasure. And what is her drink of choice?
Blood of the saints.
Not just blood. The blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Okay? It's quite clear. All right? This Babylon is a problem, and something needs to be done about her at this point. When I saw her, and some translations put a paragraph here and some don't, depending on what you're looking at, you may have one here or not. When I saw her, I marveled greatly. But the angel said to me, why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast with seven heads and ten horns that carries her. Okay? And so John is, of course, he's been seeing lots of images and has had to have lots of explanation. And he sees this woman, all right? And the angel says, I will explain more about her and on the beast she's riding on, all right, to help you identify her. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. Okay, let's stop with that sentence. Now, think about the identity of the beast. Is this the dragon or is this the first beast? What in this helps you with that?
It's rising from the abyss like the one coming out of the ocean.
It's rising from the abyss like the one coming out of the ocean. What else? Is not, but will be. Okay? Was, but is not. No, we discussed this a number of months ago, right? At least one possible way of explaining this would be right about in this time, Rome is in the middle of a major civil war. All right? Nero has done all sorts of terrible things. Lots of people unhappy. He kills himself. And there's a civil war. And we have the year of the four emperors in AD 69. And so legions fighting against legions, and with Vespasian, the general of the army over the attack on Judah, ultimately winning the day. And so you've got, not only is Israel in bad shape right now, but Rome is in the middle of something that really could destroy her, all right, with warring factions and everything. We'll get there, because it's about to mention that. And so it seems to be rising from an abyss. Now the dragon, I don't remember, in 12, I don't think it came from an abyss, right? Where did the dragon come from? I believe he came from heaven. I think. But maybe it's not settled yet. But whatever this beast is, it has to be something that the woman can ride on. Metaphorically speaking, obviously. All right, so middle of the way through verse 8. And the dwellers on earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world will marvel to see the beast because it was and is not and is to come. All right? How does this help us? Who's marveling, first of all? Good guys or bad guys?
Monolith.
Right. Those who are not written in the book of life. All right. They are marveling. They see this thing and they marvel. All right. Does this help us decide between dragon and first beast? Any thoughts? Yeah.
As far as you can remember, is the dragon ever referred to as a beast? Or is the word dragon exclusive?
It is never called a beast.
Okay.
Which is a very good argument for it not being a dragon.
So that's kind of what I was thinking. You didn't say beast, so why would we even think it was a dragon?
Valid question.
You're looking at me like a futurist.
No, I think it's very clear. I think it is definitely a beast. Yeah. Just trying to walk us through the thought process, right? To make sure we're sure, and I think that's a very important piece of information. Yeah.
Could the beast be another one of the first two that were supporting the dragon?
I think it is definitely one of those two. All right? And if we're going to say it's one of those two, I think it definitely has to be the first one. And the reason why is after the second beast is named, what is it always called in Revelation after it's called the second beast? It's always called the what? It is always called the false prophet. So once you get past chapter 13, it's never the second beast. It is now the dragon, the beast, and false prophet. The, as some call it, the anti-Trinitarian. All right? The anti-Trinitarian squad. And there's a lot of these threes throughout here. And a lot of people point out, and you know, how conscious were they thinking in terms of Trinity? We know it's a later term that was used, but you do have three fighting against God and His Son and His Spirit. All right, the dragon, false prophet, and the beast. Yeah.
The reference to once was, now is not, and will come up out of this. We talk about the fall of pagan Rome and the rise of the quote, Holy Roman Empire.
A person who would live in the 7th century would absolutely agree with you. They'd go, some of them would go, yes, this is totally that kind of thing. I don't think so. And the reason why is whenever we get to verse 18, there's a temporal reference that I think keeps that from happening. But we're not there yet, so don't look ahead.
Okay.
We've talked about it. Look verse 18. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth or land. All right? What's the time reference here? Not will be.
Is.
Not was. Is. So whoever this woman is... All right. It's an is to John. And so, no, that's why I don't think we can call it. That's one reason why I don't think we can call it Holy Roman Empire or papacy or anything like that. There's a whole host of reasons I don't think you can do that. But remember, not has Antichrist come? I tell you, there will be many Antichrists. Not a word he uses here, but yeah. Okay, that's a good point, Michael. In terms of the beast, as far as I know, is never used of dragon. But still, we're keeping our options open. All right, I don't think we won't find any solid reason to think this is the dragon. But still, we're just thinking through it. All right, because this is what you do when you do obviously. You got to think through things. All right, don't close off all your options too quickly. But if you favor this idea, then you know, keep that in your head. It'll help you in your interpretation. This is clearly Rome, and this, I think. Let's continue. Verse 9. All right. Now he's going to give us a little bit more explanation, but this is like the number of the beast explanation. All right. If you have a mind of wisdom, which means he's not trying to give you a clear explanation. All right. Because if you read this and you don't quite know what he's talking about, you mostly read it and go, I'm not sure why this helps. All right? But just like the number of the beast, if you knew beforehand that these numbers added up to Nero's name, you're like, oh, good explanation. If you don't know this beforehand, you look at the number of the beast and you go, this doesn't help me at all. All right? So in this particular case, he's going to give you another explanation. Verse 9, this calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are, here you go, Chip, seven mountains on which the woman is seated. They are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, and the other has not yet come. And when he does come, he must remain only a little while. All right. This verse right here is why a lot of people say the woman is Rome itself, right? Because she's sitting on these seven hills, and they point to the city on seven hills, right? That's actually a common explanation. Rome was not the only one called a city with seven hills, but it is a common one these days for Rome. Now, if the beast is Rome, all right, the woman cannot be Rome. And if the beast is Rome, what does the beast do to the woman here in this 8 verses or 10 verses? If you don't know, don't read. Yeah, we won't get to it. What does the beast do? Somebody say. He carries her, but what does he do after he's done carrying her? He eats her. All right? He eats her. It's quite explicit. Devours her flesh. All right? Rome does not eat Rome, I don't think is the image here. All right? So whoever this woman is, she will be devoured by Rome. the first beast. All right, back to verse 9. This calls for a mime of wisdom. Seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated. They are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, the other has not yet come. And when he does come, he must remain only a little while. All right? So, for the mind who has wisdom, for the mind who knows what this is actually referring to, this is a very clear indication on who this is. I'm not sure we know who this is, and so therefore, this might not be for us clear explanation. I think it's a reference to the line of the emperors. We've discussed this before. I won't go into it right now. Maybe we'll discuss this more later. But I think that's what it's referring to. But what John's trying to do is trying to tell them, who are they? These are kings, all right? We know this from the beast back in chapter 13. It was also clear there that these were rulers. The heads of the beast were the rulers of the beast in succession. One of which was slain, and then the beast miraculously recovers. Which I think, once again, is a reference to the civil war and the beast actually miraculously coming through in the end. Verse 11, as for the beast that was and is not, it is an eighth, but it belongs to the seven and it goes to destruction. And the ten horns that you saw are ten kings. Well, I thought we just had seven kings. Now we have ten kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. All right, so now we have more information on the beast, right? It's seven kings, the beast that was, is not, yet recovers, right? It's seven kings, but also there is a eighth that will go to destruction. But there's also now ten kings. Remember, to the beast, what did it have? Seven what and ten what?
Seven heads,
ten horns, all right? We're developing this image. There's seven kings, but there's also ten horns. Are these sub-rulers? Are these armies? It's a good question. But even if you don't know, all right, for the mind who has wisdom, here's some more information. But if you don't know the clue, that's okay, because he's going to tell you what they're there for. In verse 13. These are of one mind, and they hand over their power and authority to the beast. They will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful. So regardless, if you can't figure it out, you can know they're not good. Why? Because they're going to make war on the King of Kings. And they're going to lose. But they're going to try. Verse 15. I want to finish up chapter 17 before we break. And the angel said to me, the waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and language. What waters are we talking about?
Back at the end of verse 1.
Mm-hmm. End of verse 1, who is seated on many waters. And the angel said to me, the waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. And the ten horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to carry out his purpose by being of one mind, and handing over their royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. Okay? And so in continuing and developing, essentially we're developing the seventh bowl. All right, we're developing the seventh bowl on God making Babylon the Great drink his wrath. And so this image here should give us a really good clue to who this woman is, what he's trying to get across. Whoever this woman is, she is clearly very friendly with the beast. Up until a point, right? You don't ride on the back and drink with someone you hate. All right? So whoever it is, in terms of identification. She, this city, has to be very friendly with the beast. Until the point at which the beast turns on her and devours her flesh, burns her with fire, and so forth. All right? And not just part of the beast, everything. All right? The 10 kings, they all turn against the woman and devour her. And then at the very end of verse 17, until the words of God are fulfilled. All right? And so God had planned this. God had said it's going to happen. And the beast, who does not explicitly work for God, all right? The beast is not an agent of God, as far as he knows. The beast is explicitly brought about by Satan, all right? Explicitly brought about by Satan. That's the point of 13, all right? Beast is an image of Satan, looks like Satan, all right? Seven heads, 10 horns, full of blasphemous names. And the beast itself, all right, thinks it's doing what its master wants. All right, it is probably doing what its master wants. But what it doesn't realize, all right, I think, is this notion. Just like Assyria didn't understand what it was doing when it attacked the northern kingdom, and Babylon didn't understand what it was doing when it attacked Judah, the beast doesn't understand. It's doing exactly what God had planned for it to do. Even if it's not, if it's trying to kill God, all right, because he's trying to make war against the Lamb, false. You're going to make war and you're going to lose. And every action you do is actually in the service of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And you will do exactly what he wants until it's time for the Lord of Lords to destroy you. That's what's going on with the beast. The beast has no idea. But it is all, ultimately, so that the words of God are fulfilled. This right here is the nature of God's kingship in the world and throughout history. All right? The agents of history, nations or people, all right, they do the will of God. Whether they are trying to destroy God, ultimately, his will be done. Here, the agent of Satan himself. He is fulfilling the words of God. And the woman that you saw, verse 18, is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth or the land. Okay? This is the great city. Turn to Revelation 11:8. We already identified this city before. It's the same city here. Back to the discussion of the two witnesses way back during the trumpets. And speaking of the witnesses, and their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city that symbolically is called Sodom and Egypt, where their Lord was crucified. All right, this is the great city. We know what this is. All right, who's the prostitute? Who's the lady? Who's Babylon? It's somebody that Rome devours. Jerusalem. Okay. Okay, so that was 17. Whenever you're doing your Bible study, even on passages that have lots of confusing elements, all right, I'm not going to claim to understand everything that's in chapter 17. I do not. All right? There are some things to me that I'm like, that's clear. There are some things I look and go, I have no idea who those 10 kings are. I have notions in my head, but I don't really know. Okay? What you do is you take the context as a whole, all right, and you piece things together. Like what we did with the beast. Painfully going through some, and you know, last Sunday at lunch, I was discussing with some of you who this beast was, all right? I think it's really clear this is Rome. But still, going through it, all right? We take every piece of data we can. Whatever we understand, we hold on to that. Whatever we don't understand, we just leave it open and just leave it out there. And you think through the argument of the text and see what it's trying to develop. See the idea it's trying to bring you to. Okay, we knew from chapter 16 this was going to end poorly for Babylon. Okay, it had to because she was the subject of the seventh bowl. But this is now him developing it. And so as you read it, think through the argument. Any questions before we dismiss?
Verse 18, the woman is still.
I think that's what he's trying to say when he's
over the kings of the earth.
Yes, the kings of the land or the kings of the earth, depending on how you want to interpret it. Yeah. And that woman you saw is the great city, whoever it is. All right. If it's Rome, well, Rome was around at the time. Okay. Whatever it is, it's present at that time. So this is not the papacy, for example.
Eric, it's kind of interesting, too, that when you think about where the first Jew was Abraham, and he was mm-hmm. he was commissioned by God to bless the whole world. And she's not doing that.
No. Right? Not at all. There should have been wine, and wine was always the sign of blessing, but she was not drunk on wine. Any other thoughts? Okay. I know Revelation is confusing. Keep reading it. All right. Follow to chapter 18, which is just a continuation of this. Check your Old Testament references that you'll see in the little bitty notes. All right. Check those. A lot of those, you'll see so much language from the Old Testament being reapplied. All right. We'll discuss that next week. Let's be dismissed. Katie, you pray for us, please.